This morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Another judge sets aside a Trump order. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. Wednesday, April 26th. Thanks for being with us. Here's what's up this hour.
Saying it's likely unconstitutional, a federal judge has rejected President Trump's executive order threatening to withhold federal funding from sanctuary cities.
How'd you like an increase in the standard tax deduction? An announcement on the corporate tax rate will also include something for individuals.
Former National Security Advisor Mike Flynn may have to repay money he received from two groups tied to Russia and Turkey.
And liberal arts colleges focusing more and more on job skills and less on the humanities.
So traditional liberal arts students, whether they're at universities or liberal arts colleges, are having a hard time getting a good job out of the gate. They tend to do well down the line, but initially they struggle. And they can improve their prospects pretty dramatically if they garner a few hard skills.
Wall Street Journal reporter Doug Belkin on the evolution taking place at America's liberal arts schools. He's here in about 20 minutes. A federal judge in San Francisco says President Trump's executive order threatening to yank funding from so-called sanctuary cities is likely unconstitutional. It's the latest setback to the immigration crackdown. The ruling means the administration can't deny federal grants to jurisdictions that won't cooperate with federal authorities on immigration, something the White House has threatened. The ruling is a win not only for the two Northern California jurisdictions that filed the suit, but also for local officials who are battling the administration over its stepped-up efforts to deport more illegals. San Francisco Mayor Ed Lee.
We're glad that we're part of a country that is ruled by law and not by the dictates of somebody in the White House.
However, the judge did say that granting the preliminary injunction does not block the Trump administration from developing regulations around or defining what makes a sanctuary jurisdiction. President Trump today is expected to announce that he wants a sharp increase in the standard deduction we can claim on our tax returns. That's got the potential to put thousands of dollars back into our pockets each year. More from this morning's Dave Duncan.
The current standard deduction Americans can claim is $6,300 for individuals and twice that for married couples filing jointly. The Washington Post is reporting that while the exact level of Mr. Trump's new proposal could not be identified, it is said to be significantly higher. Meanwhile, the president will also ask for a reduction in the corporate tax rate from 35% to 15%. He will also propose lowering the tax rate for millions of small businesses that now file their tax returns under the individual tax code. Gordon?
Thanks, Dave. These companies, by the way, often referred to as pass-throughs or S-corporations, would be subject to the 15% rate proposed for corporations. Many pass-throughs are small, family-owned businesses. The White House is expected to pursue safeguards to ensure that companies like law firms can't take advantage of this new tax rate and allow their highly paid partners to pay much lower tax bills. Well, the clock is ticking. Funding to keep the federal government up and running will run out Friday night unless Congress passes a new spending bill and President Trump signs it into law. If they fail, the result would be a partial government shutdown. What exactly would that mean for us? We're joined now by Erin Kelly, congressional reporter at USA Today. Erin, what'd you put together?
Basically trying to tell people what they can expect if the government does shut down at midnight on Friday. There's some essential services that they would still get, such as their mail. People would still get the mail. They would still get Social Security, food stamps. Those are mandatory programs that Congress can't mess with. But it would be a real bummer for your vacation. It would really impact a lot of people's travel plans.
How so?
Well, for one thing, all the national parks in the country would be closed. So if you're trying to go camping, hiking, just sightseeing in any of the parks, you're going to be out of luck.
Wow. And
the same goes for national monuments that are run by the Park Service. So things like the Statue of Liberty, all the Washington, D.C. monuments, The Cesar Chavez Monument in California, all kinds of historical sites would also be closed.
And as part of that, too, didn't you say passports could be a struggle?
Passports could be a problem. They do collect fees for passports that helps fund that whole process, and that could keep things going for a little while, but it wouldn't. They couldn't keep it going forever without any kind of funding from Congress. So you could be in big trouble if you're looking for a passport and you have a trip overseas that's coming up quickly.
There's, I guess, an important distinction, too, right? Because if the spending plan is not in place, we're looking at a partial government shutdown, not a full government shutdown, or is there such a thing as a full government shutdown?
There isn't such a thing as a full government shutdown because there's too many functions of government that are considered essential to national security.
Okay.
So folks, for example, in Homeland Security, a lot of them would still be on the job. FBI would still be on the job. CIA would still be on the job. All those kind of folks. Also, the active duty military people would still be on duty.
Mm. We're speaking with Erin Kelly, congressional reporter at USA Today. Her piece is called, What Would a Government Shutdown Mean for You if Congress Does Not Get a spending Plan in Place by Friday Night? What else would we keep in mind here?
I think there might be good news. It's looking increasingly like there won't be a shutdown. You can never say never around here, but things are looking up. President Trump had been pretty much demanding funding for the start of the border wall as part of this bill, and he's been backing off of that in the last day or so. So that looks like that could be a breakthrough for negotiations and for them to get a deal.
Mm. Would non-essential federal employees be furloughed here?
Yes. In the past, based on what we've seen in prior shutdowns, about 60% of them would be furloughed.
Mm. And they typically get back pay, right? Don't they, even though they're not getting paid at the time?
It's not guaranteed, but yes, okay. In the past, Congress has made sure that they got back pay. So as far as taxpayers are concerned, you might think, oh, well, if the government shuts down, we're saving some money.
Right.
That has not been the case, because not only do the employees usually get back pay, but we're losing a bunch of fees in the meantime. We're losing money from people who would normally go to, you know, that National Air and Space Museum and buy lunch and, you know, buy souvenirs and that kind of thing. So it usually comes out as a loss for taxpayers in the long run.
So if there's a partial government shutdown, would anybody answer the phone if I called my local congressman to give him a hard time, or her?
Yes. What they've done in the past is they've kept essential employees in their office as well, and they have pretty broad leeway about what they consider essential, but
yeah.
They're allowed to keep people that they consider to be crucial for them doing their jobs.
Thanks, Erin. Erin Kelly, congressional reporter at USA Today. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Reminder, by the way, that we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter with the username at This Morning Show. If you like some cynicism and sarcasm, you can follow me directly on Twitter at Gordon Deal. The powerful performance and incredible battery life of new Dell PCs with Intel Core processors empower small business employees to do their best work wherever work takes them. Dell's U.S.-based small business advisors and price match guarantee mean you'll always get the best deal on the right solution tailored to your business needs. Powerful PCs are just the beginning of a great partnership. Call 877-BUY-DELL now to contact a Dell small business advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL. Ledge with us on this Wednesday. Leaders of the House Oversight Committee say former National Security Advisor Mike Flynn may have violated the law by not getting permission to receive money from entities associated with the Russian and Turkish governments. Committee Chairman Jason Chaffetz of Utah will ask the Defense Department to determine whether Mr. Flynn must return the payments.
We have a former military officer who's accepted money from a foreign government, in this case Russia and probably Turkey, and did not do the proper thing in terms of seeking permission and then disclosing that.
In one case, Mr. Flynn was paid more than $30,000 by state-sponsored Russian television for a speech in 2015. He also later registered as a lobbyist for Turkey, acknowledging that some of his work for a nonprofit could be seen as benefiting the government there. Both took place before his brief stint in the Trump administration. Robert Kellner, an attorney for Mr. Flynn, disputed the committee's characterization of the payments. This portion of the program is brought to you by Harry's. Now, nothing beats getting your day started on the right foot. Feel good about the way you look when you're heading out the door for the office after a clean, close, comfortable shave with Harry's. You've overpaid for razors at the drugstore or supermarket long enough. The two guys who founded Harry's have remade the entire shaving process. They eliminated middleman costs by purchasing their own factory in Germany, so you get that good German engineering, too. They also take less profit and sell directly to you over the internet. Two approaches that mean Harry's products are half the price. I use Harry's, and so does my dad. Listen, you don't send your dad overpriced and inferior razors, right? Now, since he's recovering from a stroke, my mom shaves his face, and every few weeks, she gives me that call or that text, "Honey, I need more Harry's stuff." Get started with Harry's by getting their trial set for free, an $18 value. Just pay for shipping. Go to harrys.com, then at checkout, enter the promo code DEAL to get your free trial set, an $18 value, including a handle, blade, shave gel, and post-shave balm. Go to harrys.com, then enter the code DEAL at checkout. Get your day started on the right foot like I do. Feel confident about the way you look. Visit harrys.com, then at checkout, use the promo code DEAL. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Court and a federal judge has blocked any attempt by the Trump administration to withhold funding from sanctuary cities that do not cooperate with U.S. immigration authorities, saying the president has no authority to attach new conditions to federal spending. U.S. District Judge William Orrick issued the preliminary injunction in two lawsuits, one brought by the city of San Francisco, the other by Santa Clara County, against an executive order targeting communities that protect immigrants from deportation. Dennis Herrera is the attorney for San Francisco.
The president sought to bully local governments with an unconstitutional executive order, threatening all of their funding. He sought to coerce local governments into holding people in jail beyond their release date.
White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer's office slammed the decision in a statement as an egregious overreach by a single unelected district judge. Leading House conservatives are saying good things about a plan to revive the GOP health care bill, but an influential GOP House moderate is opposing the proposal, leaving party leaders to assess next steps in a meeting today. The salvage effort comes as bipartisan bargainers edge toward agreement on a separate $1 trillion budget bill that would prevent a partial federal shutdown on Saturday. President Trump plans to sign an executive order today directing his Interior Secretary to review the designation of tens of millions of acres of land as national monuments. President Obama infuriated Utah Republicans when he created the Bears Ears National Monument in December. On more than 1 million acres of land that's sacred to Native Americans and home to tens of thousands of archaeological sites, including ancient cliff dwellings. And more people are renting hotel rooms by the minute, but not for the reason you might think. New apps like one from Recharge connect people who want a power nap or a luxury shower to select hotels in New York and San Francisco. Prices in New York range from 83 cents to $2 a minute. In other words, you'd pay $57 to $128 for a 60-minute snooze and shower and $85 to $207 for a 90-minute stay to catch up on email. The hotel hourly rentals expected to push next in Chicago and Los Angeles.
Wow. All right. Something to watch there. What do you propose to your coworker?
It's a lot of money, isn't it?
Yeah. Hey, do you want to go work on our laptops? That's weird. Thanks, Jen. 22 minutes now after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. There's an evolution taking place at America's liberal arts colleges. With their students facing rising debt and pressure to land a job after graduation, colleges and universities are focusing less on the meaning of life and more on how to earn a living. Here's Wall Street Journal higher education reporter Doug Belkin with the trend. Doug, what's up here?
So traditional liberal arts students, whether they're at universities or liberal arts colleges, are having a hard time getting a good job out of the gate. They tend to do well down the line, but initially they struggle. And they can improve their prospects pretty dramatically if they garner a few hard skills along the way. So if they get some tech skills, if they learn to manipulate data and to understand data, these are things that the marketplace rewards right now and will help them get their foot in the door, usually for a a few more dollars than they would if they're just coming out with a, you know, traditional degree in English or sociology or something like that.
All right, so why the initial struggle?
You know, the labor market's moving and changing very quickly right now, and corporations are not as interested in training up new employees as they were 15 years ago. They spend less time and less money doing that, which means that they expect young folks who just got out of school to come in and hit the ground running. If your skills are, you know, abstract reasoning, good communications, these are helpful, but they're not as helpful in a lot of cases as some of the harder skills that that these liberal arts schools are beginning to twin with their majors.
The one guy you quoted in the story said the big shift is cost. People just can't afford to be educated. They almost have to be trained. What did he mean by that, this David Brenneman?
Yeah, he sort of put his finger right on it. Once upon a time ago, the idea of a liberal arts education, which was the backbone and has been the backbone of the U.S. college education for several hundred years, has been to create someone who can think clearly, solve problems, and learn to learn, so that down the line they will continue to be a lifelong learner, be a good citizen, a good professional, and whatever they do. But that takes time to build those skills in the real world. That time has become a luxury that students don't have. If you graduate with $35,000 in debt, it's not acceptable to get a job paying, you know, $28,000. Yeah. If you've got $600 a month, you've got to make a payment on. That's just a tight squeeze. So these harder skills can help folks earn a little bit more out of the gate.
So what's that done to, say, the types of degrees and majors that students are pursuing?
There's a significant shift that's been going on for a long time away from the humanities and toward the sciences, the engineering programs, and also toward very vocational degrees like Homeland Security is growing really quickly. Parks and Recreation as a major is growing very quickly. All of the majors that prepare kids for careers in health, not necessarily being a doctor, but being some sort of, anything in health, these are all growing very, very quickly at the expense of philosophy and English and a lot, you know, history. A lot of the humanities are flat or down.
Wall Street Journal reporter Doug Belkin. Hanover College in Indiana, by the way, created a business scholars program in 2005 to teach accounting and management. Started with 19 students, today over 300. 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help to become a leader in industries that range from agribusiness and cybersecurity to aerospace and defense. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org, because helping business grow is pure Michigan.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Glad you're with us. Wednesday, April 26, Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Federal judge rejects Trump's order on sanctuary cities. Five of the nation's top 10 high schools are charter schools in Arizona. Marissa Mayer could bank $186 million. If Yahoo sells its internet business to Verizon. Romanian taxi drivers protesting Uber by blowing plastic horns. United Airlines investigating the death of a giant rabbit on one of its flights. Dale Jr. retiring from NASCAR. Blue Jays' Chris Coughlin doing a flying somersault to avoid a tag at home plate. See that video. And Derek Jeter part of a winning bid to buy the Miami Marlins. President Donald Trump's administration nears its 100th day, still hamstrung by a campaign trail promise to expand religious rights. So what's the status? Here's Wall Street Journal White House reporter Louise Radnofsky. Louise, set this up.
There was a lot of attention in early February to a draft religious liberty order that leaked out of the Trump administration. People had very strong feelings on it on both sides. What it might have done is create sweeping new expansions of the rights of religious affiliated organizations to apply their faith in the way that they did business, whether it was refusing service to same-sex couples or wanting to exclude birth control from employees' health plans. or health providers, perhaps, who didn't want to treat transgender patients. And all of these are flashpoint social issues that people have very strong feelings on either side of the issue. But the Trump administration had made a clear pledge during the campaign that it would side with religious groups in these issues. There was a controversy over the order. It disappeared. It's never been seen again. And in the remaining days before the 100-day mark, social conservatives who strongly back the Trump administration in particular are wondering, where is it?
Yeah. All right. So you say the White House is stalling. What's going on?
Well, the White House had to file in the Trump administration had to file in one piece of litigation around the contraception question. This is litigation that's been running through the Obama administration. But, of course, as the government changed, there was an expectation that perhaps the group suing the government no longer needed to be suing the government. What the Trump administration filed in the Fifth Circuit on Monday, though, was essentially stalling for more time. Department of Justice lawyers said that they were dealing with some complex issues. And they also noted that there weren't enough staff in place. Key positions in the Departments of Labor and Health and Human Services and Treasury, which are key departments tasked with resolving this issue. So they essentially punted. They needed more time on something that the Trump administration had once said was an absolute priority, top priority implication, first 100 days initiative.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal White House reporter Louise Radnofsky. Her piece is called Trump Administration Stalls for Time on Religious Rights. You said other activists are seeking this sweeping order that would extend the ability of business owners, health providers, and religious school leaders to hew to their beliefs that abortion, homosexuality, or same-sex marriage are wrong as they carry out their work. What about the liberal groups here? Are they weighing in?
They have weighed in a little bit. They haven't had much to weigh in about recently because there's been very little coming out of the White House. But certainly if you look at the way that groups have responded in the past on the contraception issue alone or on same-sex marriage, they're certainly poised to have a big fight. And that's one of the questions that the Trump administration needs to reckon with. They are essentially pinned between two very powerful forces. One is that of the social conservative allies of the administration that supported President Trump during the campaign, sometimes setting aside misgivings to do so, and the likelihood that they would face a real political blowback from liberal groups if they were to proceed with this. So it's really a rock and a hard place for them. But certainly what we've heard from the social conservatives is that failing to do this is not an option. They are ready, if necessary, to sit out an election over it, perhaps withdraw their support in ways that could be really damaging for the Trump administration down the line.
So ultimately, is there a belief that something will get done here, some sweeping order?
We heard from one person who had been very plugged in with the Trump administration during the transition phase and is still in close contact with folks there now, that he believed that it was that activity had stepped up in the past few weeks in a way that he could discern, and that he was still confident that it wouldn't be coming before the 100-day mark, perhaps, but that such an order would be coming maybe within another month or so. And one other thing to notice is because they've been waiting at this point, the groups are expecting something really substantive. They are keen not to just see what they call word magic. They really want something that they can then go and apply out there. So if anything, the wait is both increased expectations on behalf of these folks that they're going to get something that they really want.
Thanks, Louise. Wall Street Journal White House reporter Louise Radnofsky. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. It's wedding season, right? If you haven't been to one in a while, how do you know the going rate for a gift? It may not surprise you to know that wedding gift-giving tendencies vary by region, with the Northeast being a significant outlier. Details from Sarah Berger, known as the Cashlerette at Bankrate.com, which has been studying this stuff. Sarah, what have you found?
So we found that by region, the type of wedding gifts people give vary in terms of type and monetary value. We found that overall, the most popular form of a gift is cash or check, but people in the Northeast and the Midwest tend to opt for cash or check more often, while people in the South and the West regions go for a physical gift off the registry. We also found that people in the Northeast tend to spend a bit more and are more than twice as likely than the rest of the country to spend big on a close friend or family member. So that was definitely pretty interesting. It kind of makes sense because weddings in the Northeast tend to be a bit more elaborate, and a more grand affair. So I think people feel like they, you know, need to spend a bit more money to kind of earn their spot at the wedding.
Yeah, but listen, Sarah, you're the cashlerette. I mean, we need to follow your lead here in the Northeast. You got to shrink that money we're giving away and put more of it in our pocket. How can you lead that charge for us, please?
So I think that people should never feel obligated to spend big on a wedding, even if they know the couple is spending big. That's totally the couple's choice, and that, you know, you shouldn't feel pressure or dip into your savings or take on credit card debt just for a wedding gift or to be able to go to a wedding. I would recommend start budgeting for wedding season as soon as you start getting save the dates. Those normally start going out months before, sometimes even a year before the wedding, so you definitely have time to trim from your flexible expenses with every paycheck and start stashing cash as soon as you get to save the date, so it's not as a big of a financial hit when wedding season arrives.
Wow. What about declining an invitation just because you feel you can't afford a wedding gift? People do that, I guess?
So we found that 21% of people have turned down a wedding invite because they felt like they could not afford to go. And that includes 27% of women and 16% of men. So that was a little bit interesting. So it is somewhat common. I think that maybe these people who are turning down wedding invites have to travel far to get to a wedding, which is understandable. You know, airline tickets are so expensive right now, and it makes sense that if you don't want to take a bunch of vacation days or dip into your savings, that if you can't realistically afford to travel to go to a wedding, do not feel hesitant to turn down that invitation, and you shouldn't feel guilty about that.
Well, we're speaking with Sarah Berger. She's known as the Cashlerette at Bankrate.com. They're out with a new survey about who gives what for weddings, since wedding season is pretty much upon us here in the U.S., So what's behind, I guess, some of these trends? Like you mentioned, cash makes for a popular gift in the Northeast and the Midwest, but in the South, it's more a physical gift from a registry. Any idea where that comes from?
So we can't, you know, I can't really say for sure why that might be. One thought that I had was, you know, Northeasterners might be more inclined to give a cash or check because they know weddings in that area are typically more expensive.
Okay.
So they could be giving that gift of a cash or check, anticipating that the couple might want to use that money to help pay for the event itself.
Mm.
So that could be a reason. We also found that it did break down a bit by age. Millennials and Gen Xers are more likely to give a gift off the registry, while baby boomers say they prefer giving a cash or check, which I kind of found a bit surprising, especially that millennials are opting for a physical gift off the registry.
Thanks, Sarah. Sarah Berger, the Cashlerette from Bankrate.com. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
In business, risks and rewards come with every decision, like moving to the cloud with Office 365. While its benefits include anywhere access and lower costs, cyber threats and user errors can quickly wipe out data and the money you save. Barracuda Essentials for Office 365 provide an added layer of security and functionality for threat protection, email migration, data recovery, and quality of service. Move securely to Office 365. Visit Barracuda.com/essentials to learn more.
It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Court and congressional negotiators are inching toward a potential agreement on a catch-all spending bill that would deny President Trump's request for immediate funding to construct a wall along the Mexico border. The emerging measure would increase the defense budget and eliminate the threat of a government shutdown on Saturday. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
It's really good news that the president seems to be taking the wall off the table in the negotiations we're having on an appropriations bill this week.
President Trump insists the wall will get built.
We're already preparing. We're doing plans. We're doing specifications. We're doing a lot of work on the wall, and the wall gets built.
An existing temporary funding bill expires Friday at midnight. President Trump is expected to highlight plans today to cut the corporate tax rate to 15%, emphasizing that tax reduction should take primacy over deficit concerns. But this may make it more difficult to get a fiscal package through Congress because most Republicans are staunchly against widening budget deficits. Budget Director Mick Mulvaney warns that a complete proposal won't be ready until June. An investment group, including former New York Yankee Derek Jeter and former Florida Governor Jeb Bush are negotiating to buy the Florida Marlins, but haven't yet lined up financing for the deal. Several media outlets are reporting that the investment group has a tentative deal in place to purchase the Marlins for $1.3 billion. MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred told reporters last night multiple groups have made bids. Google is taking more steps to target fake news and offensive search suggestions. The tech company says it has a new screening system and has reprogrammed its autocomplete feature that automatically tries to predict what you're looking for as your search request is being typed. And Beyonce is marking the anniversary of her album Lemonade by making things sweeter for women seeking higher education. The singer has announced she's providing scholarships for women to attend selected colleges. The award will go to women at each of four schools: Boston's Berklee College of Music, New York's Parsons School of Design, Howard University, and Spelman College.
Very nice.
Very good.
Like to hear
good
those stories.
Her. Yes.
Yeah, good on her. Nicely said. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Time now for a small business update, and it's brought to you by Staples. Staples has low prices on everything you need to promote your business, from business cards, brochures, and banners to pens, magnets, and calendars. Visit staples.com/copy and print for more. Staples, make more happen. Did you know that you can still find a working Blockbuster store? The movie rental chain closed nearly all of its stores in 2013 after going bankrupt, but 9 of the 12 stores left standing in the U.S. are alive and well in Alaska. The New York Post says store manager Kevin Damood, who's worked for the one in Anchorage for 26 years, says he has to give out business cards to prove he works there. He used to put stickers on VHS tapes that read, "Be kind, rewind." Remember those? The other three surviving Blockbusters are in Texas, by the way. In Alaska, internet is pricey, so brick-and-mortar shops can be a better value. And in remote areas, it's a good place to see another human. After first opening in 1985, Blockbuster grew to 9,000 stores. It eventually was killed off by mail-in and instant streaming services such as Netflix, a company that Blockbuster reportedly could have purchased for $50 million in 1997, but as you know, declined. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.